All right, everyone, welcome back to On the Gravel, the F1 podcast at Alethio Network. Oh boy, we have camera today. Hello, audience.
You can see Raven's beautiful face today and myself.
Yeah, you too, bud. Oh man, what a race.
Not super chaotic for the first race of the season. A pretty lackluster.
Yeah,
it race was nice, in all honesty.
Though. It was nice to see.
There was some cool stuff happening up and down the grid this week. So we got a lot to go over.
We do. I think we'll go over the little bit of elephant in the room for F1 news, being Red Bull finished their investigation on Christian Horner. So that officially happened on early Wednesday morning for us American folk. Apparently, there was also leaked messages that came out to all of the team bosses, but I don't believe anyone was really saying what was actually in there. I do believe they leaked to the public as well, but I'm not going to go searching the depths of Twitter.
I also think those were AI generated. It looked like you had a 12-year-old on like AOL in 2005. It didn't
oddly
look
specific.
Legitimate at all.
Oddly
no,
specific.
I just saw that comment and I thought it was hilarious.
A little bit of news just today, but Jos Verstappen apparently had a meeting with Toto Wolff on the paddock this week. And the possibility of Max going to Red Bull in 2025 is not out of the question.
Mercedes.
Jesus.
No, you're good.
It's early. It is early. We're a little tired here, but we'll get through it. Less mistakes.
Very jet lagged. I'm very jet lagged today, actually.
He did get back from vacation. So he's going to potentially go to Mercedes just because Jos Verstappen has a huge problem with Christian Horner saying he believes that this is going to be something that blows up in Red Bull's face in a while. And if you watch the post race, like the state, like the podium awards, when the Dutch national anthem was playing, oh boy, did they show
you know how
Christian
excited
Horner
I was for that?
And his wife just arm in arm, smiling like nothing was happening in the world. So
I will say this comment is made by Jos Verstappen, so I don't know how notable or credible that is, but I don't know. He's been right in the past sometimes, but it feels like Jos is kind of dragging Max into his own underlying conflict with Christian Horner. So I don't know how much of that is actually going to unfold in the way that Jos thinks it will, but if I saw Max at Mercedes, that would be kind of interesting. And then who goes to Red Bull?
Oh my God.
I don't
just
get
throw it. It's going to make silly season even more silly. And we are excited for that.
I don't know how ready for that I am.
No, this offseason is going to be wild. But I do think Jos is right where this is going to blow up in Red Bull's face and possibly be a problem for the future.
Yeah.
I know I kind of wrote it down maybe a little bit later, but Ford and Red Bull are having a lot of internal issues, not Red Bull F1, but Red Bull's parent company as a whole for like all of their antics.
Mm-hmm.
Ford is not very happy with this, and I think they would have liked a different decision personally, but we will see. I mean,
Ford has a reputation that they have to uphold as well, and you know the issues with Christian Horner, it's going to be attached to anybody who is related to the Red Bull family in any way. And unfortunately, right now, that technically is the Ford family as well. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that Ford is a bit worried about a situation like that. They probably want some more clarity. I mean,
I think that was the biggest issue between them was like, you're just not being clear to the partners about this, and that's an issue on us. Like,
yeah, I mean, we have almost no clarity as fans and viewers. So I'd like to see how much they're actually getting as well. They're probably in the dark like we are as well.
I was going to say, they're probably getting just as much information as the public is, which is not good if you're trying to please your partners.
Yeah, or if you're an investor, anything like that.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, not surprised.
This is the first time in F1 history that all the cars crossed the finish line in the opening round of the season. I believe Oliver said it was like
15, 16 times.
So congratulations to all the drivers on that. There was a lot of issues that we saw, but we'll get into that later. We saw what was happening to Andretti Cadillac, bid being denied, trying to get into the sport, but Audi is still committed to rebrand Sauber in 2026 with the regulation changes.
Yeah, there was a bit of rumor that Audi might be pulling out or something, and then there was not really a full statement.
They kind of came out and were just
reconfirmed their ambitions, yeah.
Which is great for the sport because they are, I don't know, are they in WEC yet?
Is Audi in WEC?
I know they had a bid.
Don't actually believe off the top of my head.
I know they had a bid in 2023 or something. Yeah, the FIA said that they've been accepted by the FIA, but it doesn't seem like they still are.
Yeah, and it's looking like they're going to run GT3 cars instead of the hypercar class.
It says here that in 2023, they were pushing to be a part of this next season, but apparently it looks like it might be another year or two. So, I don't know.
Get ready for a wave of Audi in motorsport, in all discretions of motorsport in 2026.
Rally, WEC, everything. I think they're coming back and making a push, just like they used to do. Ex-Formula One driver Ivan Capelli? Accused Total Wolff as the one who leaked Lewis to Ferrari. Now, personal opinion, what do you think?
I think it was Toto.
Why?
I don't know. I feel like Toto, you know, maybe wants more eyes on the Mercedes to make the Mercedes seat more desirable, something like that. I mean, if I was Toto Wolff as well, with the partnership that I've had with Lewis Hamilton throughout his entire career, I would be kind of annoyed to find out that Lewis was leaving for another team after so long. Like, I don't know. This feels very similar. Like I said this a couple weeks ago to the Lewis leaving McLaren for Mercedes. He believes in a project that's, you know, forming. So I think Toto is a bit disappointed and feels maybe betrayed by Lewis Hamilton. So, you know, maybe throwing that out into the media or something just to have a little stab in his back, something like that.
I don't know. I think it is a possibility that he leaked it to be like, okay, well, if you're wanting to do this, then we're making this a big deal.
Yeah. And I mean, we've also heard that Lewis had told other drivers before, the actual move was announced. Oh, I was rolling right into it. But before the move was announced, he had told other drivers like Guan Yu Zhou that this was happening. And then that leak happened. And yeah, it was very interesting because you have to remember, at least over here in the US, that news article came out at like 4 a.m. So it was a very weird time. I mean, you know, that's the morning in the UK, but
don't forget that Lando Norris was in a cave in Vietnam, so he didn't believe that Lewis was actually going to Ferrari for like an extra day.
Okay.
Shout out Alex Harrington at Sports Illustrated for the article about Zhao. We got another article about him a little bit later. Oh, it felt good. It felt good to see
cars on track.
Oh, and the lights go out.
Race.
Hear Brundle again, you know.
I won't lie, but this is going to cause a lot of controversy. I am more of a fan of the Alex Jakes commentary than I am of Crofty and Martin Brundle. And I love Crofty's voice. I love his inflection when he's talking about the race. But there's something about just Alex Jakes' voice and, you know, his knowledge on the sport. Don't get me wrong. Brundle is probably the most knowledgeable pundit that they have going over the races. But I think the Jolyon Palmer, Alex Jakes commentary is just as good as the Brundle Crofty. So that's the one. Oh, right.
I don't know. I haven't watched it yet, so I can't confirm or deny that take. I think we'll go. Oh, we have a few more things before. But did you know that we didn't even get to 100 days without hearing the Dutch national anthem?
I won't lie. It's actually my alarm sound in the morning because, you know, you need something very strong to get you up in the morning, and that very much scares me. So I've been waking up to that the past few months during this offseason. You know, try to prep myself, get ready.
As a normal Ferrari fan behavior.
Yes. You know, we like pain, you know?
speak for yourself. So yeah, we didn't get 100. I mean, everyone knew it was going to happen, but Max also just now needs 3 more wins to beat his record of consecutive race wins from last year, because people forget he won the last 7 races.
Yeah, he's on an 8 streak right now, meaning Max Verstappen has won 18 out of the last 19 races.
So
it's pretty bad.
And I don't think that's going to change. We are begging someone else to win, please.
It'll happen. It'll happen.
We'll get into things that I noticed, and then we'll take a little break. And I know it's going to be a shorter episode, but
we still have a lot to talk about.
We do have a lot. I was going to say, we have the entire race, so that'll take a little bit of time. But some things that I noticed, V-Crap looked lost. You know, the V-Carb was, they definitely had some issues that they were saying. I know Daniel in his post-race interview was talking a lot about those first 2 stints being horrendous for them. They basically got no gain when they switched from the mediums to the hards, and then the hards to the back to the new mediums.
You also had the entire issue with team orders within the last like 4 or 5 laps of the race with the team asking Yuki to let Daniel through, and he came over the radio acting like an absolute child, which was kind of horrible. He did end up doing it in the end, but then I don't know if you saw on the cool down lap.
Yeah, I saw.
Yuki just dive bombed Daniel into the first corner to kind of like make a statement to him. And I feel like, you know, in the debrief and, you know, back at the HQ, that's going to make things at the team very awkward, because his reaction was completely unnecessary. Given that they weren't fighting for points at all, it was essentially let Daniel through so he can try and attack Kevin Magnussen, gain one more place. I mean, it's the first race of the season, so Daniel overtaking Kevin would have put them ahead of Haas in the Constructors' Championship. And I think Yuki was a little bit more close-minded with that. I don't know why. Maybe it's inexperience, but, you know, this is his 4th season now, so it might just be immaturity. And that's been an overlying issue with him the entire time he's been in the sport.
Yeah, I think part of it is just being that team player. I don't think Yuki has ever really been in a role where he has a teammate where they need to actually work together more.
Yeah.
I really do think Daniel was the better pace. Obviously, he was, what, top 4 over the weekend?
Yeah, he was
practice.
Top in FP1 as well.
So it makes sense that I think they wanted him to kind of be a little bit more aggressive. I feel like he knows this track a little bit more as well.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I don't think that's a great look for them to be going into the season like this. I mean, obviously there is that overbearing fruit of whoever does better and the Red Bull Racing is going to get moved up to that Red Bull seat.
Yeah.
So I think that's a lot of desire there that's kind of pushing them. Obviously, that car is a lot better due to all the upgrades and them switching to
essentially old RB19
yeah,
parts.
Yeah, essentially the last year's Red Bull car. So I don't know. We'll have to see where they kind of come out in the next few weeks. Obviously, didn't go too well for them this year. Daniel also had a front wing issue at one point, and it took him a little bit of time to do that. Valtteri Bottas also got screwed a lot.
That was really bad.
I mean, that pit stop video is abysmal.
It reminds me of the horrible pit stop that he had at Monaco.
Oh.
Where the infamous 48-hour pit stop where they couldn't get the tire off at Monaco, and they literally had to ship the car back with that soft tire still stuck on the car, and they had to take it off at the Mercedes HQ. It's so funny.
So, unlucky for him. He also just, I think he had a puncture at one point, so they had to box early and get that fixed out. So, a lot of unluckiness for some of the guys on the grid, but for others, it was a little bit better. Talking about Aston Martin for a second. Although literally being in the middle of the pack, securing 9th and 10th, that is very, very impressive. From Stroll getting spun out in the first lap, coming all the way back to 10th points and securing points for Aston Martin. A huge point right now.
Yeah, we're definitely going to, after this break, sit down and really talk about the start of the race, because I have a lot to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it, you know, 3 points is 3 points. The Aston Martin came into the race. They knew they weren't going to be able to fight the top four teams. You know, they expected to have a lot of quali pace, not as much race pace. And that was shown very quickly into the race with Alonso, you know, slowly dropping back to the Mercedes and the McLarens. But it's giving me kind of an Alpine vibe from last year where, you know, you're not really a midfield car. You're not really a back marker car. You're kind of just in no man's land. So we'll have to see how that develops throughout the whole season. But I don't think Aston Martin's in a bad place.
No, I think they're definitely in a place to improve. And I think give it three more races, they'll bring out a wave of upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you saw the clip of Lance congratulating, like them just like seeing each other after the race for the first time. And he goes, glad you're not in an Alpine.
Yeah.
It's like, oof, punch in the gut to all the French.
But oh, we're going to talk about the absolute dumpster fire that Alpine is. We said it was bad in testing, but
now
the race, just this whole race weekend really showed just how bad that car is.
Sticking with Aston Martin for a second, I want to give out like a little shout out to the Stroll family for actually giving Fernando a decently competitive car in a few years like they promised.
Yeah.
I think that team is in a really good place with the two drivers. Obviously, Lance being the son's owner, so it's a mm-hmm. little harder. But I think overall, you have the two guys that actually care about each other and are willing to work for the team.
Very decent relationship together.
Yeah, I think this year they're going to do sneakily well. I think it will be a lot of quiet, like P5 and up, but
mm-hmm.
they're going to secure points, I think, pretty consistently.
I mean, they're the ones that are in the place to take advantage of, you know, issues that happen with the top teams. You know, given that they're not in that top four fight, if anything happens in that top four fight, nobody's going to benefit more towards the bottom of the grid than Aston Martin will. So you do have to think about that. So your point's definitely right there.
McLaren and Mercedes fought it out till the end with George and Lewis in fifth and seventh, respectfully, and Lando and Oscar getting sixth and eighth. I think that's a very fair split of the points. I think everyone was kind of banking on those two teams being the third and fourth best teams on the grid this year,
yeah,
especially right now. But McLaren, I think, is in the better spot out of Mercedes. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think their chassis upgrades were decent enough to actually give them a push, and they didn't have the floor difficulties that they had last year.
Yeah. It was also strange. You, in the race, you really saw George Russell fighting the Ferraris more than they were, you know, trying to defend from the McLarens at the beginning. And then they kind of dropped off, you know, in that second and third stint and really fell back to falling with the McLarens. But I think those two teams, McLaren and Mercedes, are pretty evenly matched on race pace, at least at a circuit like Bahrain.
100%. Ferrari, obviously being the second best team out of the weekend, securing third and fourth, respectfully. Carlos, oh my God.
He made a statement.
He made multiple statements. Even Max in the podium room,
yep,
cool down room, saw the overtakes and looked at Carlos and was like, okay, I see you.
Yeah. In the race, at least, Carlos was convincingly the best driver this weekend.
Charles did have some issues, though, which we'll get to later.
That's true. Alpine. Charles missed out on a pole position, if you didn't know. He had the fastest time in Q2, which was actually faster than Max's pole position time, which is kind of depressing, but, you know.
Oh, no,
we didn't want the curse of a Charles Leclerc pole to a Max Verstappen win in the very first race of the season. I did not want to see that.
Very true. Also, it's good to see Ferrari being number two. I think those tires, their tire deck was
you can
so
tell that
much
that's
better.
Improved. You
oh,
can really
God.
Tell that that's improved.
That was a huge thing that they were focusing on, and you could see it with a lot of those overtakes by Carlos. He just had way more grip than everyone else.
Yeah, most definitely.
Alpine. God, why? The French, you are historically decent at making cars, but in the last 10 years, oh my God. The according to Alex Harrington at Sports Illustrated, again, the technical director Matt Harmon and the head of Arrow Dirk DeBeer have stepped down. The pair are in the process of completing their notice periods, set to depart the Enstone team in April. They are struggling more than anyone else on the grid with keeping people and turnaround and making a car.
Yeah. Alonso and Piastri really dodged a bullet there.
Oh my God. They are so lucky. I feel like they knew something was coming. But my thing with Alpine is you got two really, really famous investor groups in the last two years. Jeremy Clarkson and the Hawthorne Brewery and
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds and I'm forgetting the other guy's name that owns Wrexham FC.
Ryan Reynolds and then the guy he owns it with. I just can't remember who that is. But yeah, you know, you've had all this investment. You have two race-winning drivers at the team, both Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly. You know, you have competent, capable drivers and you're giving them a trash can.
Rob McKinley. That's who it is. That's the guy's name I was forgetting. But you have two giant sponsors and a lot of fame. Like, you have a lot of UK fans now because of Jeremy Clarkson.
You have a lot of US fans now.
US fans because of how big Ryan Reynolds has a hold on our industry. I don't know if people know this in around the world, but like Ryan Reynolds owns Mint Mobile, which he has historically just been like, we are going to do things different to keep prices low. They reused all of their ads. I don't know if you know that, Oliver, but shoot all of them in front of a green screen so that they can just change the background and the story a little bit.
Yeah, and Ryan Reynolds does enough as a character himself to keep the ads fresh every single time.
He gets his mom. He's gotten the very first customer. It's really impressive. So I feel like Alpine is one of those teams, kind of like Haas, where it's just like, that's America's team. Everyone kind of has a little bit of rooting for them. But it makes the issue of like, why? Why is this happening? Like, do we need a new wave of aero and technical directors and designers and all this stuff to kind of come in?
They also find themselves cycling through team principals so fast as well. I mean, you have Cyril, Otmar Szafnauer, and now you have, I can't remember who's team principal right now. It changes so much that I literally can't remember off the top of my head. But there's so many moving parts in that team that I think it's very hard to get a stable groundwork to build off of. I mean, coming into this weekend, I never expected to see Alpine lock out the back row of the grid at Bahrain. Pierre Gasly has now qualified 20th for the last two Bahrain GPs. It's really depressing. And then seeing them in the race, you know, not really being able to push forward and make any notable, you know, charges throughout the field. That car is in a horrible place. Like, they are convincingly a backmarker. I won't say worst team on the grid yet, but they are convincingly a backmarker this year, which is not something you expected, you know,
finished last year.
Yeah, exactly. They finished sixth last year.
Middle of the pack.
With no competition from the backmarkers.
They also were not competing anyone. So
they weren't. They weren't.
So, like you said earlier, no man's land. Kind of similar to how if you...
Oh, they're in a land now. They're in a land now. It's not the promised land.
I think we'll take a break right there, everyone. We're going to take a short little break and we'll be right back. Alrighty. All right, we are back. We're going to start it off this second segment with just some things Oliver noticed during the race, which you got to watch a little bit more than I did, but...
Yeah, I watched it on in the car on the way from Virginia to Pittsburgh. So I watched it on a 5-inch screen. But I did notice a lot. So I want to get right into the start. The start being qualifying. Obviously, before we took our break, I mentioned how bad Alpine was. But on the flip side, I think my real star of qualifying was Nico Hülkenberg dragging his Haas from, you know, the depths of the field into Q3. Give that man a round of applause.
He deserves it. Is he the longest current driver on the grid without a win?
Yeah. He doesn't even have a podium.
He did finish pole.
He did take pole in the 2012 or 2010 Brazilian
Didn't
GP for Williams.
Oh, no, he got like P3 or P2.
P2 in Canada last year before that penalty. But, you know, that's something you'll always notice. Nico Hülkenberg is a phenomenal qualifier, and I think that's where the Haas really shines. But, you know, he took that 10th place qualifying into the race and found a way to lose almost all 10 of those places right off the start. So, you know, everybody's kind of going around trying to avoid Nico Hülkenberg after his horrible start. And he ends up, you know, locking up into the first turn, hitting Lance Stroll. This is why I said Lance Stroll was my driver of the weekend as well. But he hits Lance Stroll, spins him around. And then Valtteri runs into the back of Nico Hülkenberg, has a front wing issue for the rest of the race because of that. You know, it wasn't damaged enough to where they would change it. It wasn't worth that much time.
But it definitely took off a lot of time.
It took off a lot of time for him every single lap. So, yeah, Nico Hülkenberg, you know, started the weekend off so well and ruined it in the first corner. But I think that collision really showcased how good of a driver Lance has the opportunity to be. You know, he's a very inconsistent driver. We all know that. However, easily my driver of the weekend in the race. It kind of reminds me of, you know, the Sergio Perez 2020 Sakhir getting spun around and, you know, coming back to win the race. Lance didn't win the race, but Sergio Perez, in my opinion, is a better driver than Lance Stroll. But, you know, he was able to get that car all the way back into the points. You know, finished pretty close to his teammate. So I was very, very impressed with how Lance drove throughout the weekend. And then the other big thing that we noticed in the race, you know, before all the haters come at me and say, you know, Logan Sargeant's washed, he's trash. You have to understand that Logan going off that lockup he had, everyone was like, oh, this is classic Logan Sargeant. He will be my surprise driver of the season. Just you wait. But he had a steering issue, which for some reason midway through the race caused his brake bias to be shifted forward. I think it was up to 93% on the front two wheels, which for those of you that don't know, the brake bias is the amount of pressure that is taken in by each set of two wheels, each set of axles. So having it shifted forward to 93 on the front essentially means all of the brake pressure is only being generated by the front two wheels. So not having the other two wheels working at all, going that quickly, you're going to lock up and throw it off the track.
Also, I feel like people don't realize that when you're braking in a car like that, you're not turning the wheel all the way. Mm-hmm. You're turning the wheel slightly and then applying the brake to get more rotation in the car.
I was going to say, you're going to...
So when you have that front wheel brake bias, sorry for cutting you off.
No, you're good.
When you have that front wheel brake bias, it's not only shredding your tires super, super quickly, but it's also not allowing you to turn properly. Like, exactly. Think of that. Like, every single time you're pushing the brakes and you're turning, the car just straightens itself out.
Mm-hmm. That's why most of the time you want to, you know, get down to your cornering speed before you start turning the wheel. But, you know, it's kind of impossible to do that when the brake bias is shifted so far forward that you can't turn the car whatsoever. So, you know, he flew off the track, kind of just sat there for about 30 seconds. You know, we thought his race was over. Comes back, goes to the pits, makes his stop, whatever. He's, you know, race finished. But there was also a power unit cooling issue with the Williams throughout the entire race, which is why you really didn't see them making any notable progress up the field, because I know James Vowles was very vocal about the ability of the Williams in the race, but this cooling issue essentially made it so that they could not follow other cars closely at all because the engine would overheat way too quickly. So they were kind of forced to make their overtakes
through pit stops and that kind of stuff. And that's extremely difficult to do. So they were kind of sitting ducks throughout the race because you can't really fight hard either or the engine's going to overheat. So it's kind of finding a gap and then just doing lap after lap, setting a good pace in clean air. That's really all they could do.
Quick little note, but yeah. I didn't realize K-Mag finished 12th both in front of both Red Bulls or V-Carbs.
Yeah, they tried to get Daniel Ricciardo through, but it just wasn't enough.
But more so talking about Haas being 12th, like sneaky 12th podium by them. So
well, what sucks so much with Kevin Magnussen finishing P12 is what could have been for Nico Hülkenberg. You know, he started 10th. I think K-Mag started way further back. I think he got knocked out in Q1, and he was able to make it up to 12th. So that does show good signs for the Haas's race pace. But, yeah, I would have liked to see Nico potentially extract, you know, a P10, maybe even a P9 finish with that good qualifying that he had. But he decided to throw it away with a poor start into the first corner. And then, yeah, my other point was just the horrible luck for Valtteri this race. You know, he really had nowhere to go in that first lap collision, and then just compounded by that horrible pit stop. I'm surprised they didn't actually change the wing while they were waiting for that one nut and tire to be brought out. Well, like, that was the perfect time to do it.
Let's talk about that, because I don't know if people saw that, but I'm pretty sure this year they changed the drill bits on the guns to, like, have like LEDs.
Yeah, they looked way more technologically advanced.
Well, it's like, I'm pretty sure the teams have tried to do similar stuff like this in the past, but it seemed like almost every team on the grid kind of had this. But it essentially was like a sensor that would turn green whenever it was done tightening. So mm-hmm. you knew when to like move on. But if you look really closely, the nut, like he puts the gun on, he turns it and it goes green, but the wheel is still like slightly bent.
Yeah.
So I think immediately it just like threaded a nut, which obviously all of those parts are CNC'd, fine machined to make the exact precision. And then they're all measured, and Red Bull has a little ad about it. It's pretty cool. Go check it out. But it's not easy to get a brand new part like right like that.
Yeah.
It takes time for those guys to run and get it. So to your point,
with something that technologically advanced, you're not, you know, anticipating an issue like
yeah,
that.
You're
happening.
Not anticipating. Jesus, I just did what you did.
No, you're good. I do it all the time.
You're not anticipating something that's so meant to be perfect to just malfunction out of the blue.
Yeah.
But to your point, it would have been a good idea to maybe change that front wing while they were in the pits. So,
you know, benefit of hindsight.
Exactly. You want to get into some of the things, some post-race news?
Yeah, most some stuff definitely. That we I want to hear about that cooling issue for George Russell.
Yeah, let me get that up. So George Russell, in the post-race interviews, was revealing that he had a cooling issue. I'm getting that clip right now.
Yeah, because George looked phenomenal in the first half of the race, and he was fighting those Ferraris, and he kind of dropped back out of nowhere.
Let's see why. Whenever it loads, and now there's no sound.
Technical difficulties.
I think there is sound being... I don't know where it's being played to, but it's being picked up. So maybe it will be on the video.
Sorry for interrupting you, George. I know you're trying to talk.
You're trying to talk so hard, but maybe we'll not be able to play the clips. Maybe I'll have to put those in post. So
it's okay. But yeah, George Russell losing half a second a lap to this cooling issue kind of fell into the same trap as the Williams were having. So yeah, the engine overheating seemed to be an issue for a lot of teams.
I remember him saying that it was a... issue on... All right, there we go. Now we should be able to hear him talk. But it was an issue on like the setting that they were on. So mm-hmm. apparently they just totally biffed it. So
Hey, George, that early phase of the race, I thought you were right in this, and it was turning out to be a good one, and then things just fell away a little bit. Can you explain any of that?
Yeah, it was, you know, made a good move on Charles, and as you said, I thought, here we go. As soon as I got into second, I had all these big red alarms coming on my steering wheel. The engine was overheating, and turns out we got the cooling wrong on the engine, and we had to turn the power down. It was costing us half a second a lap. We don't quite understand how we got it wrong because we've not experienced that yet, and especially so early in the race. But then it was impossible to defend. So that was a real shame. I think the podium may have just been out of reach, but you know, as I said, it had a huge knock-on effect, and from that point we just went backwards.
How concerning are
so losing half a second because your engine's overheating is a bigger issue than I think people really understand.
Got to do half a second times 57 laps. You know, you're finishing almost half a minute behind where you otherwise would have. So that's definitely very costly.
Jeremy Clarkson was also the checkered flag waver for...
We finally got a real fan to wave the checkered flag. No Tim Cook, no Shakira. This guy's legit.
Real fan. He was too drunk to actually do it comprehensively, though. A fan pointed out on his Instagram where it's like, how much did you have to drink today? And Jeremy just responded with, yeah, a lot. So
I won't lie. If I was the one waving the checkered flag, I'd probably be plastered as well.
All right. Charles also had a little issue with his car. I kind of forementioned it earlier, but let's see what he has to say about that.
Yeah, there's a reason Carlos was so far ahead.
Charles, obviously difficult day out there. Just how tough was it to kind of go through and have a car that really wasn't responding in the way that you'd hoped it would do?
It was impossible to drive properly. We had big problems with the brakes, which we'll investigate what happened in order for it to not happen again. This obviously was a big issue, so... In the first 10 laps, it was impossible. Every lap I was doing, I would brake 3 or 4 meters earlier, but the issue was getting much, much worse every lap. So every time I was basing my feeling on the previous lap, but in the meantime, the issue was a lot more, so I will get there and I will lock up like crazy again. So it felt really bad, and then it stabilized, but in a place that was completely out of the proper window. I think on the radio, the team told me that it was more than 100 degrees more split between front right and front left, and that stayed for the whole race. So we were in a very, very bad place, and it's like this.
Wow.
Yeah.
100 degree difference between the front and left tires is...
Yeah, I think I saw at least, you know, 3 or 4 shots of Charles just locking up, whether it be into turn 1, turn 10... And it was costing him so much.
You want to go over to F2 for a bit?
Yes. So for those who don't know, I follow F2 as almost as religiously as I follow F1. And that's just because I like to see the up-and-coming talent that have the chance to, you know, make it into the sport. And I personally believe this year's Formula 2 grid, after seeing how the rookies performed in F3, how the incumbents are still performing in F2. This grid is one of the most stacked in the modern era. Maybe only one out by 2018, where you had Lando Norris, George Russell, Alex Albon, Nick DeVries. But let's go into the actual race. So after losing his spot in the Red Bull Driver Academy, Zane Maloney, he really took that shot to heart and did the double for only the third time since the beginning of the 2022 season. The double meaning they have two races every single weekend. They have a sprint race, which is a reverse grid top 10, and then they have the feature race, which is just like your normal F1 race. So Zane Maloney qualified P3 for the main race, meaning he started 8th place for the sprint race. So to go from 8th to 1st and then 3rd to 1st, it's very impressive. The kid is really talented. It was also his first win in F2 as well. So I think Red Bull just didn't give him enough time, but you know, that's how Red Bull is. But yeah, also very notable that a lot of rookies took to the ground just sprinting.
Was Antonelli one of them?
Antonelli, no.
Really?
He did nick a point in the feature race, but you know, Kimi skipped a lot of steps to get into F2. You know, he didn't drive in FIA Formula 3. I think one of the last series he drove in was ADAC Formula 4, which is the German F4 championship. So he definitely skipped a few steps. But currently, besides Zane Maloney, who was a rookie last year, the other five spots in the top six are all held by rookies. They're all looking really good. I knew they would because Formula 3 was so exciting to watch last year. But I think the biggest point that is very important is the new regulations for F2 are really working. The most notable thing you'll see visually is the chassis looks way more rounded, especially in the front wing area. And it's making it a lot easier for these cars to follow. There were so many on-track overtakes. If you watch the highlights for this race, you know, you can have dead periods in F1 of, you know, up to like 25 laps, but you're seeing overtakes every single lap at different parts of the track. If you want overtaking, if you want equal cars, you know, it's really just down to the driver. Watch F2. You will not be disappointed.
It's not as much like F1 where these cars are more different. Would you say it's more similar to like IndyCar?
Yeah, I would say it's a very similar championship to IndyCar, except with a lot younger drivers and they're really trying to prove something.
Because yeah, I was going to say, instead of this being like the end of the line for them potentially going overseas, you know, this they're fighting for Formula One spots.
Exactly. Which... This is the penultimate step in their career. And it was phenomenal. I cannot wait for the next F2 weekend.
Is that next week or in 2 weeks?
That would be next week. They should be racing at Saudi Arabia as well with F1.
That's going to be exciting. WEC also went this weekend. I don't know if you saw that, Oliver.
6 hours of Qatar.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't catch the actual main race, but I obviously took a look at the highlights last night while I was getting ready for this.
I didn't get to watch it because I had to do homework.
That's quite all right.
But hey, I graduate soon, so then I can watch all the racing I want. But congrats to Porsche Penske Motorsport for winning the event overall. Also want to give a shout out to Team Toyota Gazoo driver Nick DeVries for coming in sixth. You know, everyone was hating on him for being a bad driver. But
he's not washed. Formula One just might not be his discretion.
I think so. I think this is the discretion that he benefits the most in, just based from his style of driving.
Exactly.
Also, congrats to Manthi Pure Racing with an X in the A for winning the LMGT3 class. That was an exciting race as well. I think a lot of those cars are very fascinating and a lot different. I saw some of the cars' top speeds are differing by almost 5 or 6 miles per hour. So,
mm-hmm. Qatar is also a great circuit. We'll be racing there later this year for F1 at Lusail. So there's definitely a lot to be excited about.
It's going to be awesome. No rally car news because Kenya will happen at the end of the month. But anything else, Oliver? Or is that going to be it for us today? A little bit of a shorter episode, but...
Quick pre-prediction. Ooh. Who takes pole position? Who wins at Saudi Arabia? Now that we actually have...
I think
it's a bit of information.
I think it's going to be the very first Charles Leclerc, Max Verstappen of the year.
Oh, okay. So we're getting into that. So Max Verstappen wins the race from a Charles Leclerc pole position.
Mm-hmm.
Can't lie. I could definitely see that happening.
This is the race for it to happen, I feel like. So
actually, I think Osama bin Russell might do us all a favor and take Max out into the first corner. We're going to see a beautiful Charles Leclerc victory that I've just been yearning for so long.
Lewis Hamilton's going to get mad and shunk people into the wall like you do in F1 23.
Oh, man. This is going to be a tough one to watch. Red Bull's probably going to run away with it again.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that'll wrap it up for us here today at Alethio. A little bit of a Sunday recap for you, but we'll be back tomorrow with
Saudi Arabia,
and we'll be back next week. So we'll catch you guys then. Bye.
See you on Saturday.